Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kyung Dam from University of Washington in Seattle. Today I'm going to present a new method for calibrating parameters for the cherry blossom prediction model that we had in our lab for a couple of years. And yeah, let's get started. This is a picture from Tidal Basin in Washington, D.C. area, and it's from 2013 in April when there was a peak bloom of cherry blossoms. And not only in Washington, D.C., it's kind of all around the world, this cherry blossom is kind of considered as a symbol of coming of spring time. And it's celebrated in many festivals, and actually that is pretty important for various reasons, like some economic reasons and some as well as some like, entertainment reasons. And here's a graph from EPA, Environmental Protection Agency in the United States, and here you can see that the peak bloom days around for last several decades, and you can also see that the period of cherry blossom festivals in that area, and you will see that there is a wiggling in the trend of peak bloom days, and sometimes it happens really early in late March, and sometimes it happens it delays until late April, and it. It's quite important to predict these dates because this festival is scheduled around this peak bloom dates, and if we have peak bloom dates earlier than the festival, it will be really like embarrassing for the people to come to the festival. And if we have the other way, then that could be another problem. So it's pretty. So many people have an interest in this predicting this peak bloom days of the cherry trees. That's why we had come up with a model to predict this peak bloom days of the cherry trees, and that was based on the two steps model, which was originally for predicting the dormancy release of various kind of trees. And basically, it accumulates the chilling requirement with the thermal unit, which is derived from the daily temperatures. And when it reaches the certain threshold, then it will start accumulating heating units. And it approaches certain threshold, then we consider that point as a. Well, the original paper was predicting the dormancy release, which was around the horizontal line. But our model from our lab, like a couple of years ago, that extended this model to predict the flowering of trees. So basically, it extended the heating line up to more longer to match up with the flowering dates. And well, it's pretty simple, but it works pretty well. And we use this model to predict the peak bloom dates of the festival in Washington, D.C., and it was well received, and it was published in Washington Post, and many people saw that articles as well. Anyways, but this method was not without limitations, and first one was that actually to estimate those three parameters, it took quite a lot of computation load. And we use some kind of extensive grid search method to estimate those three parameters. And it depends on the grid size, but if we set it quite finer resolution, then it could run up to several couple of days. And another problem is that I think it's pretty like in nature problem in this parameter estimation of this model. The thing is, the parameter space is not really like unimodal, so you can basically see some solutions that can match up with quite different solutions with similar cost. So it can predict pretty similar dates, but the parameter itself is pretty different. from each other. So that makes, well, that's a part of reason that it takes pretty long time to compute and find the optimal solution. And yeah, the another one I'd like to mention is that we had quite a wide range of data, observation data from the Washington DC area. So not only the peak bloom dates, we also had some like intermediate observational stages that I would like to show in the next slides. And here, we would like to exploit those data for better estimation. So here's the method. So we can generalize this model to this equation. So we kind of estimate peak bloom date in the left side with three parameters, base temperature, which is determines the thermal unit for each day, and chilling requirement and heating requirement for each year. So every year we have temperature data, and we can estimate different peak bloom dates according to that. And here is a equations for estimating, calculating thermal units, and it's actually from the original paper by Cesar Chiu in 2004. So basically we have base temperatures and mean and maximum temperatures, and based on each case we can calculate different thermal units. And well, I'm not gonna go into much detail here. Basic idea is that so if we have base temperature low, and if we have daily temperatures much higher than that, then we have heating, and if we have the opposite side, we have cooling. But in between them, there is a more calculations that involved. Anyways, and here comes some phenological stages that we have considered in this research. So the original works only considered peak bloom dates, which can be observed in the park. And the other one is the dormant release, which cannot be really observed in the field because it doesn't show any external appearance difference, but still considered in the model. And then we have some intermediate stages that we can actually observe in the field. So we can summarize that the previous algorithm, they only use the peak bloom date, and that's how they come up with those estimated parameters. So those parameters are estimated just all together, so in one step. But it takes really long time because we have to visit every combination of parameters. And that's why we have come up with a new method, which I call sequential algorithm. So basic idea is to break down those estimation steps into three different steps, and do that in different steps. So first one is to estimate the TC, which is a base temperature, with only considering the thermal units between green colored in bulbs and the peak bloom dates. So basically we assume that those thermal units required to reach from the GC to PB are all same for the data sets. Like if we have 20 years of data, then we assume that those thermal units are all same for those years. That way we can get TC. Then we estimate RC, which is a chilling requirement. And chilling requirement actually determines the point of dormant release. So it's actually a function of chilling requirement. So we run another optimization method to minimize those differences. That way we can get RC. And then we now have a TC and RC. Then calculating RH, which is a heating requirement, is kind of just a simple optimization method. So basically, we estimate those parameters in different stages. It takes really much less time, and usually it converges really easily. So that is one advantage of our method. So here is an illustration of this is from 2013 data, and you see that gray backgrounds as a daily temperature variations, and on the left side we have a daily chilling units, the pale transparent blue areas, and then those blue dot lines are accumulated chilling units, and then after we reach say RC, then it kind of dormancy is released, and now it starts accumulating heating units. And then it goes up to certain point. So here we use GC and PB to estimate TC here. Then we use dormancy release and peak bloom dates and the thermal units between them to estimate RC. Now we have an RH with those minimizing difference between estimated and actual peak bloom dates there. So we compare this method and the result, the estimated parameter set from this method to the one that we found from the brute force algorithm, which was published in another couple of years ago. So the original optimal parameter set was here. Is here, and the new parameter set estimated by this new method is here, and you can see there is not very much difference in there. And if we plot that the calibrated period and then assessing the errors, you will see our new method is actually come up with less error here, like 3.10 units days. So and the time required to compute, estimate those parameters was actually much less. So our sequential algorithm runs quite linearly, so it just takes 33 seconds on my laptop. But in the case of brute force algorithm, you have to visit all of the parameter spaces, so it depends on the number of the grid points. And well, it's just a comparison. So for visiting just one grid point, it took 0.25 seconds. So it can easily scale up to hours and days depending on your grid size. So I think it's much our new method is much more efficient than that. But I would like to mention that this method is also without any caveat. So the thing is, we had five different intermediate stages, but we cannot use all of them because each stage is lined up in sequential order. But in the later stages, they all have heating only because it's already warm springtime, so we cannot really come up with chilling units out of that. So the optimization did not really work on that. So we could only use the first, earlier stages, green coloring buds or fluorescent visible. In that case, we could estimate TC parameter pretty similar to the original one. But other stages led to some errors. Even it just converges to zero, which means that the TC is just going down to the zero value. So here is a conclusion. So I propose a new sequential algorithm that could estimate pretty similar parameter set as the original brute force algorithm, but it ran a much shorter time, so I would say it's much more efficient. And we used additional constraints from the observational data, but we should be really careful when we choose which stages that we want to use for this estimation, because the reliability depends on the context. And hopefully we want to apply this method and the same two-step phenology model to other species like apple trees or peach trees, because they share kind of similar patterns of dormancy release and flowering and maybe like fruiting as well. And that's one of our goals to do in next, as a next step. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. We have time for questions. Especially so also the next speaker is Vinicius.
So you mentioned Moindopile as a approach for Apple and Peach. So I mean, it can help, and I guess the phenological stages are the same, but the influence of environmental factors may be different. Can you comment? I mean, how difficult is it to recalibrate? Do you have a sense of one crop to a different one?
So the question is, how would it be difficult, different to estimate parameters for different crop species? Yeah, actually, it should be recalibrated for each species. Even well, in the same cherry trees, actually, we have different cultivars. Well, in this case, it was called Yoshino, which is main species in that area. But they also have another cultivar, which is called Kwanzan, which has much later flowering dates. In that case, we had to recalibrate the parameters as well. But we didn't have an observational data set for that cultivars, so we didn't include in this presentation, but the basic idea is that we have to do that anyways. And that's why we need this kind of efficient method to calibrate in much shorter time, efficiently.
Any other questions? Does that weather data come from the airport nearby?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Do you think the tidal basin would have any influence? I know the airport's pretty close to the water, too.
Yeah, that's another problem that we have to think about. But the main idea of this work was to just compare the parameter sets from the previous work, which is also based on the same temperature data set. So I think in that case, we cannot really say that the temperature effect in that. But maybe we can use another data set from another region, then we can compare that as well. Question is that the temperature response is linear, seems to be linear in this model, and how do you like to do with kind of non-linear model or something? The calculation of thermal units is actually linear, but the response itself, I would say, is depending on the daily temperature variation, and you see that those response curve is not actually linear throughout the period. But, and that makes some kind of, I would say that still works for this problem, but maybe we can still think of using like non-linear response function, like maybe beta function that I mentioned before. And maybe we can use that as well. But yeah, that could be one thing that we could do. But the main idea will be pretty the same. I mean, in general, it would be the same for the running the model and estimating parameters. Ages? The question is, are the ages of the trees, plants? We just assume that, well, there's no like effect from the aging of the plants, because those trees are actually planted in that area like several decades ago. It's like early 1920s, 1930s. So it's been already pretty old. And we assume that their like growth and phenology is kind of constant like, throughout those years, and that's kind of basic assumption that we have for permanent estimation here.
Okay. I say you think
for this, this day.